Divorce is on the rise even in some of those societies today. What causes divorce? The thing wrong with American marriages is American courtship, the American habits of dating. Of what leads to marriage? This is what sociologists and marital counselors, divorce lawyers, and the rest have almost unitedly said. But some of the advice you get from both ends of the pole is really hard to understand. For example, one well-known divorce counselor, I guess you could call him. He's a psychologist, but you'd almost have to call him a divorce counselor. In other words, how to be sure to get a divorce. He's an author of books and a speaker before people, and he was talking about various new freedoms in the new morality that is being widely promulgated today. And some of his advice to young people was, he recommended the wearing of I'm available buttons by members of both sexes seeking partners. He wasn't talking about marriage, incidentally. He told about how the current sexual revolution will bring virginity at marriage close to the vanishing point. He seemed to think that was a good thing. And he described marriage as the main enemy of romance. He claimed immorality has nothing to do with sex relations between consenting adults. And he said how very silly it is to marry in ignorance of what you marry for. I agree with that, except that he had it twisted around in the way that he meant it. But there's not much question about the misery that comes along as a result of following that kind of advice. Now, some people are saying, despite the condemnation of adultery in the Ten Commandments, and despite the warnings in marriage ceremonies and what people vow to do, and many of these things lay stress upon some version or other of the time-honored injunction to forsake all others, but despite the laws, many states that have laws or nations that have laws against adultery, and that is the primary and sometimes only ground for divorce, infidelity is one of the biggest and most severe problems of society in the 60s, both before and during marriage. And you would be absolutely appalled if you knew the numbers of illegitimate children being born. For example, in a survey of 100 teenage unwed mothers, all of whom had had illegitimate children, these were studied in Connecticut from the first pregnancies way back in 1959 to the date of the release of the study, 95 out of those 100 who had had their first illegitimate child had continued until they had had up to 5 illegitimate children each. Only 9 of them were married of the 100, and 60 of the 100 were living on welfare. It's about time we realize what is happening. You probably know, if you can just bring it down to your own personal situation, of many homes that have been broken by divorce. Many of you listening yourselves have been divorced or are about to be. And if not, you probably aren't experiencing the happiness and the peace and tranquility you wish you had in your home. How many hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of couples are there who live together like perfect strangers, who hardly speak except in grunts and snarls and snappings together, who hardly ever eat together? The husband comes home greasy and filthy and plops down in front of the television set. The wife, of course, angered at this, doesn't give a hang about how she appears. They seldom go out and do much together. The last time he gave her a box of candy or even a little rose, well, he may never have, but if he ever did, it's probably so far gone in the memory now that they can't even recall the event. The kids are regarded as house apes to be babysat and got out of your way and sent off to school and let somebody else rear. And what is happening to our marriages in the Western world is one of the deep and the serious problems confronting our society today. And like it or not, believe it or not, is one of the severest threats to the continuation of our free society. It's about time we took a good long look at it. Now, I have stopped momentarily in a series of programs on law and on what kind of a world it would be if everyone obeyed the great principles of law as set forth in a certain book on law and about human nature that I've been talking of, because I came to the 7th of those major 10 points of law, the 10 Commandments, which says, thou shalt not commit adultery, and talks directly about marriage. And I mentioned how many examples in that bestseller, the Bible, talk about what happened to break up homes in the past and why marital unhappiness resulted. And we talked about the very first marriage and how it had everything going for it, and yet even that marriage failed. Then we took a look at American customs, the new customs of dating today. Dating is brand new and going steady. and what dating is doing to the youngsters today, and what it is that makes parents think they want their children to have everything they didn't have and to live vicariously through their children that great and glamorous romance they themselves missed. We discussed some of the evils of dating, and I told you we wanted to talk about constructive dating. What is the right way to date? What should marriage be based upon? Now, one thing is sure. Many young people today feel resentment and hostility. Some of these same young people who have come before a judge, 75% of whom had come from homes broken by divorce, no doubt feel a certain resentment and hostility toward one parent or the other, or perhaps a certain resignation about their own insecurity and condition in life. And yet they themselves seem bent on making the very same mistakes for which they seriously indict their parents. They themselves are embarked on the same course of action that are going to result just as surely in the same pattern in their lives as the pattern in the lives of their parents that caused the divorce and caused their unhappiness, the unhappiness of the children. Now, marriage is for adults. Marriage is permanent. Make up your mind that marriage is for life. Marriage is not the accidental outgrowth of infatuation or of teenage puppy love. The gay whirl, based partly upon sentiment and partly on resentment toward the older generation, who say, you're too young. And isn't there a song about that when they say that I'm too young? All the plaintive ramblings and whinings and cryings of some of the young people, some of whom are encouraged to date at age 9. Marriage is for a great purpose. It's not only for the purpose of creating a home, of having children, and providing those children a secure and happy environment, but marriage is the very picture of your real destiny in life. It's a part of the very purpose in being alive, and the inventor and designer of marriage proves that in his bestseller, the Bible, because that is a consistent bestseller every single year. Now, what does it mean to fall in love? What is this business about teenagers going steady? Let's face it, dating leads to marriage. What is this about falling in love, then? A recent series of articles in Life magazine talked about American courtship and what was wrong with it, and the ideas of many parents about this idea of falling in love, and they feel that falling in love is about as simple and natural as breathing out and breathing in. It's some great fortuitous accident that occurs to all people sooner or later, and maybe several times. Now, let's face it, not every young woman has all of the qualities of Shirley MacLaine, Deborah Carr, Marilyn Monroe, and Doris Day, all put together. Yet this is what they're looking at constantly in the motion pictures. But then neither do all men have the qualities of some of the movie stars they see, of Clark Gable, Cary Grant, maybe Jimmy Stewart, and a few other people you could mention all put together. But often you'll see a girl of virtually no personality and not much beauty, and she fully expects to get swept off her feet by the knight in shining armor someday who will be just like all these fellas wrapped up into one. Now, this seldom, if ever, happens, of course. Does it ever happen? And dating, the way it is done today, doesn't even give people a chance to get to know one another, because dating is essentially putting the best foot forward. Dating, in a sense, the way it's done today, is a sort of a determined effort at deceit and hypocrisy. Now, don't kid yourself, it isn't. Think about it for a moment. Just because some young fella has a surfboard and an open-air automobile doesn't prove he's going to be a good father and husband and provider. And you're probably never going to feel exactly the same way you thought Rhett Butler was supposed to have felt about Scarlett O'Hara. And this love of the over-romanticized kind, the fluffy pink clouds of vanity that is promulgated by entertainment, novels, and the like today, that is believed in by many a dreamy-eyed youngster, this highly impractical idea of love which is not love but infatuation and puppy love, has led to hundreds of thousands of marriages, many of them forced, or the old shotgun type, you know. And remember that giant percentages of teenage marriages had to get married. Many, many of them were already expecting at the time of the marriage. So, with this highly impractical idea of love, many young people do their courting under such artificial conditions it's almost impossible to learn anything of real importance about one another, except whether or not you're a good surfer, or you mix with other people well, or your tastes about how much mustard you like in your hot dog. And taking a girl to the movies, or out dancing, is hardly the method to discover how competent she might be at cleaning house, nursing a sick baby, or disciplining her children. You listen to some character tell you about the color of your eyes and your hair, how he likes the freckles on your nose, or the cut of your ankle. That doesn't tell you one thing about his opinions involving the size of his family. It doesn't tell you a thing about his father and his accomplishments. It doesn't tell you one thing about whether he expects his wife to work after you're married. But nevertheless, this is the way dating is being conducted today. And going steady, as I have proved to you in the last couple of broadcasts, from the words of teenagers themselves, is not as desirable as a lot of people seem to think. The early age at which boys and girls start, quote, falling in love, end quote, in other words, becoming infatuated through all the social pressures and the pressures of their parents and the pressures of the schools today, is disastrous. 9 out of 10 fifth graders, 10 years old, in one study, claim to have sweethearts. And nearly half the boys and more than a third of the girls in this fifth grade were going out on dates away from their parents. More than two-thirds of them in the fifth grade had experience with kissing. I catch my 13-year-old boy kissing a girl, and since I'm still bigger than he is, you talk about problems. He's going to have some. Now, of course, that's just my personal feeling, you might say, but that's based upon a great deal of research, a great deal of truth that I have gathered from an unbelievable pile of sources. And our Ambassador College News Bureau has access to the sources of information and news around the world, but I base that not only on what's happening in the tragedies of many other people's lives, but also upon the wisdom of that bestseller that talks all about the right kind of preparation for marriage, the right way to grow up, the right way to select a mate. Of course, my son, that'd be about as repugnant as him to anything, because I've told him a little bit about some of the situations in the world. It's safer to kiss your dog than it is your girl. Now, I don't mean that facetiously in one sense, in another I do. I once saw where you have this glass and they take some germs, you know, and then they had this microscope and they took the kiss of a girl and the kiss of a dog and they analyzed all the germs. And dogs don't have as many harmful germs to human beings as boys and girls do, apparently. And this was a study I actually saw in one of the big leading weekly news magazines a number of years ago. I'm saying that humorously, of course. Nobody wants to go around kissing dogs or letting dogs lick them. But then when you uncover what's happening, well, I'm about to uncover some of it for you. At the amount of hours that youngsters spend in necking, and it averages about 1 hour on the average date, and a lot of the times between total strangers on blind dates arranged by dorm friends and companions, well, it'd be about like seeing a whole bunch of people on a busy street walking along and stopping momentarily and throwing themselves into each other's arms and standing around and necking for about 10 minutes and saying, see you later, without even finding out what is their name. And that's what's happening today, constantly. Now, it was found that these little fifth graders were getting all kinds of experiences with kissing. The fact which led a Dr. Carlford Broderick to wonder, if they're kissing at 10, what do you think they're going to be doing at 15? Now, why dating should have replaced softball, bicycles, dolls, baseball gloves is one of the big mysteries of our day. Sociologists are scratching their heads and wondering, what is it that gets into parents to try to sort of enforce upon their children dating? And maybe the same reasons that drives one parent to try to get their kid to become real active in Little League Baseball because they were kind of a fat clod and never could make the team, and they want to see their little kid become the famous pitcher and develop pitcher's elbow, which some of them do. Maybe it's a desire to live vicariously, something in their children they never enjoyed. They have thought that perhaps mothers who encourage their little girls to go to fifth grade dances and enjoy kissing games want their children to be more popular socially than they ever were. Maybe that's the reason behind it. But they confess, the sociologists, that they're a little bit baffled by the feelings of parents in enforcing children, or forcing upon children, dating at such a tremendously young age. Now, young people who begin dating before they're even in high school soon find themselves going steady. This has been proved. And at a time, of course, when marriage is totally out of the question. Now, they're not exactly friends, they're closer than that, but they're not exactly lovers, or at least not supposed to be, and so this begins to become rather an annoying problem. Often, as a matter of fact, they will have absolutely nothing in common, except the fact that they happen to dance together at a fifth grade party and they've known each other for a certain number of years, and they may be absolutely bored to tears with each other during some of these periods when they're engaged in a pastime, which has been known to various generations as petting, spooning, necking, or what have you. And yet they're sort of hooked by it. And they say, well, I don't want to disappoint her. Or they say, well, everybody expects it of us. Or they say, well, it's security, and we always have a date when we go to a dance or something. Or they say, well, it's cheaper. If I'm out of money, I'm not afraid to tell her about it. And some of the statements about why youngsters go steady are rather revealing, too. Now, as a part of the American dating system, necking seems to be inevitable and a part of virtually every date. One college girl who made an informal survey found that only one out of her 36 sorority sisters denied doing it, and the other 35 averaged about an hour of it per date, including blind dates with strangers. Now, of course, that can result in some pretty painful consequences later on. And the difficulty in breaking off after going steady has already been cited. I mentioned that before. Now, putting it rather brutally, that means that you are so isolated from being able to shop around for the right mate, and that's what you're encouraged to do by sociologists anyhow, if that's putting it rather frankly. People isolate themselves. They never have the opportunity to develop their own personalities or their own character. And more than that, they never have the opportunity to really successfully take a good long look at enough people to get a good broad point of view about the qualities necessary for a compatible and a happy marriage. And how many dozens or hundreds of marriages are there in communities every single year where if you got the innermost feelings, the bride would tell you, well, really, I married Joe, Bill, Hank, or George, whatever his name may be, because everybody expected it of us. Here I am walking down the aisle about to say yes because, well, we've been going together for so many years, everybody just kind of expects it of us. It's kind of like you're marrying the gang. You're marrying the society. You're marrying a certain stratum of that social world. You're not marrying this individual. Well, you're told in this life series to shop around for the right mate, to date plenty of people. Nobody can continue to practice a deception successfully 24 hours a day for 50 years of married life. But the deceptions that are practiced on dating are myriad. A young man who seems to be the very soul of loving kindness may just be reflecting the fact that he's pretty deeply in love with himself. And a girl who's all sweetness and laughing and hair flying and good humor waving a bonbon at a football party may be a real shrew at the breakfast table. So it's a pretty good idea to find out what your prospective mate acts like in many different situations. And I'll give you some good advice. You girls want to find out what your children are going to look like and what kind of a fellow that guy is? Take a good long look at his mother and father. Find out about his family. See him in all kinds of situations. When he's been deprived of something, when he's been told no to something, when he's gotten a bad grade in school, when he got the poor break, when he didn't quite get the grade he thought he was going to. Find out how he reacts to frustrations. You fellas want to find out what kind of a wife you're going to have, you better take a good long look at the girl's mother. Is she huge? Is she giant? Is she fat? Your wife's going to be the same way. The chances are about 90 out of 100. What kind of a housekeeper is she? That's the way your wife's going to be. What kind of a cook is she? That's the way your wife's going to be. I've found, because I teach a class on preparation for marriage, I have found that time and time again, I don't care what you say and the kind of advice you give, that finally, when a couple gets married, the wife or the young bride is going to revert. She's going to revert almost instantaneously to doing exactly what her mother always did. And she will revert in doing that from the way she puts pillowcases on the pillow or to the way she cleans up the baby. And if you want to take a good long look at what kind of a person you're going to marry, you better get to know the family. Who was this very first American father who committed this horrible sin of when his daughter came in and said, I'm going out with Joe? He didn't even bother to look up to find out what Joe looked like. Now, you can choose the wrong person, and in doing so, you can end up living all your life with an invalid because maybe you didn't know about the other problems he had, or maybe you didn't know there were mental problems in the family, so you can end up living with a neurotic. Or you can end up living with a lifelong enemy, and that can mean divorce. And some divorces end up in murders. Or choosing the right person could mean a lifetime of happiness, of personality adjustment and growth, and a new generation of children who are also destined for happiness. And dating is preparatory to marriage. Even though dating should not always be an amorous experience, yet constructive dating will and does lead to marriage. What kind of dating should be done? Why is it that youngsters who would play perfectly naturally together around the neighborhood, cousins, brothers, and sisters, who would still be wrestling and playing softball and running around on their bicycles, clear on up into their mid-teens and later, are suddenly going out and holding hands and stuffing popcorn down their faces in movies? Why? Dating does not have to have amorous overtones. But you take those same kids who played softball and put them in an automobile on the way home from a motion picture, and it's something else again. Now, most dates are accidental. People say, let's go downtown and see where the action is, or let's go crash a party, or let's hang around the malt shop or the drive-in and see what the gang is doing. Idle minds, idle ideas, accidental dating, let's just go and cruise the drag, the main street, and see what's on. That's the idea. No planning, and of course you sit with your minds blank together in a motion picture theater, staring at the scene, having your emotions played upon, and usually it'll be the latest beach set, and the voluptuous teenagers dancing and gyrating wildly about with little on around their bonfires and surfboards, or maybe it's the latest murder mystery filled with the private detective stories about sex, poisoning, shootings, explosions, gassing, strangulations, and the like. And these are the movies that appeal to teenagers, the mod and the rock pictures like The Gang on the Motorcycle and the rest of it. And then, of course, after this, they go home singing the song, Getting to Know You. That doesn't quite make sense, does it? You're not getting to know anything or anybody except what Hollywood claims teenagers are like. And then, of course, there's television. People come over to spend an evening at home with Dad and Mom. What do? They end up hunching down, slouching around on the couch or the floor, looking at television for about 5 hours. Greatest conversation killer of all time, it's no wonder many people go steady. They'd be hard put to come up with a suitable conversation that a stranger could appreciate. They'd be hard put to talk their way out of a traffic ticket. A lot of people, now it's not to say that every juvenile is a blank-minded stoop who can't pronounce very many words in the English language, but a lot of people simply do not know how to converse with one another because they frankly don't have anything on their minds, they don't have anything to say. But what about constructive dating? Would it sound purely old-fashioned to make dating a family affair, to invite friends and not always just pair off somewhere by yourselves, but several friends and maybe even in mixed numbers, not all of 3 and 3 or 4 and 4 or 2 and 2, but sometimes an uneven number? To indulge in open-air dating, sports, with groups of young people, not the constant pairing off. It would just make life a lot more enjoyable for people. A few backyard barbecues and ice cream mixings could be a pretty enjoyable occasion, and parents might get to know some of the kids their children are hanging out with. And I don't mean open-air dating in the form of hanging around Muscle Beach or going out surfing constantly together away from the parents either. But all too many parents do not encourage that kind of dating because all too many parents live such lives so as to discourage any child of theirs to ever invite another child into their home anyhow. And because a lot of homes are pretty obnoxious places to be, most kids want to escape from them. Why don't you ask yourself, what are your plans in life? What do you expect out of dating? What are your intentions concerning marriage? Do you want children of your own? What about marriage? Are you aware of the seriousness of it? Are you preparing for the responsibilities of it? It's about time you ask yourself questions of that nature if you're a teenager and you're wondering what your life is going to be like. There isn't one of us who, as a young teenager, didn't wonder, who are we going to marry? Where are they? I wonder what they're doing right now. And we had our dreams and our hopes and our ideas that we went to bed with and tucked into our pillow every single night. But how many hundreds of times, thousands of times, maybe millions, do people take those hopes and dreams and hold them up to this freckle-faced kid they suddenly meet and decide to forget the whole business and run off on a gay whirl of clanking tin cans and rice, only 2 years later to come right back down the aisle to the divorce court and say, I can't stand it anymore, I'd like to get rid of this clod because I didn't know he was that way. It's about time we realize that we need to stand up and tell some of our youth about the education of the whole man, the development of character, the forming of willpower and the rounding out of personality, the development of moral strength, of honesty and integrity, and that these are a whole lot more important than a gay, romantic, social whirl that ends in a premature marriage. Already, the chances are, saddled with a baby on the way and no job and nowhere to go and no provision for it. And it's about time the clergy stood up and thundered out the laws of God on the subject and showed the teachings of Christ who said in the Sermon on the Mount, not only you should not commit adultery, but even lusting is a sin. It's about time educators, instead of giving way before the demands of the freedom marchers, the free speech marchers, and the free immorality marchers, began to stand up and talk about the results of such immorality and the broken lives and the wretched minds and the hideous mistakes that are being made today. It's about time somebody began to tell our youth that there are hidden, unseen, spiritual laws which, if they are obeyed, are going to result in tremendous dividends and blessings. And if they are disobeyed, are going to result in such wretchedness as you can't believe. You need to write for these articles I've announced on the subject on how to have a happy marriage, and the one on how to solve family arguments. And especially if any of you are having marital difficulty and you can't seem to get along, write for those articles. Don't do another thing. Give it one last chance. After all, you've been living together all these years. Don't take such a fatal step without giving it one more chance. This is free of charge. No price for it. No one's going to call on you. And also the booklet on the plain truth about child rearing. The articles on how to have a happy marriage, how to solve family arguments, and the plain truth about child rearing. They deal with children, marriage, dating, how to solve family arguments. They're free of charge, no price, and also the current number of the Plain Truth magazine, 52 pages, full color, this lead article on President Johnson's trip to Australia. All you need to do is send your name and address to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.